Traybert and Straub versus UPS. Mr. Zimmerman.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I represent a small jeweler in Brookfield, Wisconsin, who shipped a diamond ring with UPS Air Service. He declared the value of the ring to be $50,000, paid a premium, and insured the ring in that amount. This would bring this case under the federal common law known as the Released Valuation Doctrine.
But the problem with your description of that doctrine is that it appears to assume that all carriers have the obligation to provide insurance for any value, whereas UPS did say, we just don't want to ship things that are worth more than $50,000. We don't want to be in that business. We don't want to accept it. And so it seems to me your issue is really just whether that statement, which appears three or four times in their tariffs, was clear and conspicuous enough to satisfy whatever requirements there are to bring that to a shipper's attention. I don't see the released value doctrine as being terribly helpful. You could say it was worth $1 million, and on your theory, if you put $1 million down, UPS would have to sell you insurance.
No, UPS can set the limits of the insurance that it sells.
Why do they have to sell you $50,000 worth of insurance if they don't want to be in the business of carrying $1 million? You know, I've decided to ship the Mona Lisa via you.
Right, but
maybe they don't want to do that.
Their liability would be limited to the released value of that.
But they are trying to say, we don't want the item.
And I'm saying that violates federal common law.
Why do they have to? What federal common law rule requires a carrier to accept an item that it doesn't want to have?
The federal case law says that a common carrier may limit its liability provided it does certain things. One, as you pointed out, is provide reasonable, conspicuous, even prominent notice of that limit of liability, which we maintain was not done in this case.
I understand that.
But in addition to that, they must provide the shipper with a fair opportunity to select a higher level of liability.
Right, and that's where I'm having trouble understanding how that links up with what UPS tried to do here, which was to say, we are in the business of carrying items from the value of zero through $50,000, but we don't want to be in the business of carrying items for any insurance, you know, for $50,000 worth, for full insurance, for anything. They're trying to say that. Now, your position has to be
my position,
that there's something in federal law that says that's impermissible.
That's exactly my position.
So it's my position. If the Louvre comes to UPS and says, we've decided to ship the Mona Lisa to the United States for an exhibit, and we think its value is $50 million or whatever, UPS has to do it?
No, UPS does not have to insure it for any more than what they decide to offer.
Why do they have to assume the risk of having it at all? Why can't they say, we don't want that shipment?
The only risk they assume is the declared value. In other words,
you're not answering my question, though. Why can't they cut it off at the front door? Why can't they say, we don't want that item? We aren't in that business.
I understand. Because that violates federal case law.
What law?
The released valuation doctrine.
No, don't tell me the released value. But what law requires a carrier to take all things? Could a carrier say, we don't take perishable foods because we don't have any refrigerated trucks?
Well, in fact,
according to you, no. They have to just take the perishable foods anyway.
There is a case that I cite. The fact of the matter is, in this case, that they do not exclude shipment of diamond rings. Number two.
Well, they do exclude shipment of items worth more than $50,000.
Okay. Well, the declared value of this item was $50,000.
But their language says we don't care what the declared value was. It's the real value that we're looking at.
And I submit to you, with all due respect, that violates the released valuation doctrine as we understand it.
Why? I mean, so So you think no people just have to be insurance companies as well as
no, in this
shippers.
Case, UPS was an insurance company, did sell a insurance policy for $50,000.
I don't understand at all how you get from the released value doctrine to a separate doctrine that says shippers cannot exclude from their business a set of items, that is to say those worth with an actual value, not a declared value, but an actual value of more than $50,000. And you haven't cited me a federal statute that says they can't do that. You haven't cited me.
I have cited cases, Your Honor, that say exactly that.
I don't read them as saying exactly that, actually. What about clear and conspicuous? Maybe we should move over to that. When you go to the website, I thought this exclusion popped up pretty quickly. You say that it's buried in the midst of lots of
language. Item 460-something. So there are hundreds of items before you get to this limitation of liability. And the cases do say reasonable notice, conspicuous notice, prominent notice. And I would cite you to the Kessel case, which is a Ninth Circuit case against UPS, which is sort of the flip side of our case, in which the shipper sought to hold UPS liable for more than the declared value, and the court said, no, the declared value is the value. That is the value. In addition to which, of course, that in this case, UPS did sell an insurance policy for $50,000.
Yeah, I wonder, when this thing was lost, or when this litigation began, did UPS tender to your client the $150 or whatever it was? It was actually $174.65 that you paid for the insurance.
Based on the record, UPS did not tender $100 or whatever it is.
$174.65.
That was the premium charge on the insurance policy, but
right.
Their liability is also $100 under their
but
tariff.
But I'm asking a different question. Since they've said we never should have sold you the insurance
right.
policy to begin with, I want to know if they gave you your
the
money
answer,
back.
The answer, Your Honor, is no.
Okay.
They did not. The other case I would cite to you is the Pony Express Courier case, which is an 11th Circuit case, where the court said that the declared value of the goods is not overridden by the tariff or the service guide. That really this is an agreement between UPS and the shipper that in the event of damage or loss, the value of these goods are what the declared value is. The released valuation doctrine has also been called the declared value doctrine. It's really a stipulated amount which UPS says we are willing to accept this risk and no more. And this is exactly what happened in this case. The purpose of this doctrine really is to have uniform shipping laws for interstate commerce and to, according to the Kessel cases, to arguably keep the rates low. In this case, both of those purposes are not served by the UPS position that there is absolutely no coverage here. When they sell a $50,000 insurance policy and all the shipper wants is his $50,000. Otherwise, they're relieved of any and all liability for negligence and with absolutely no quid pro quo. I see that my light is on, so I will step aside. Right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Mr. Moser.
May it please the court, I'm Mitch Moser, and I represent the UPS defendants in this case. This is a simple breach of contract case that's governed by federal common law.
What about the insurance policy, the fee for the policy?
I'm sorry?
The fee for the policy that Judge Wood had discussed earlier.
Judge Wood asked whether the fee for the policy was returned, the $174. That fact is not in the record. I can submit to the court that in the claims process before litigation, that issue is handled. And whether a shipper accepts that money back or chooses to bring litigation happens. But
that's an issue on strategy. That is, if they take it back, then...
If they take it back and leave, I don't get to come here. And if they bring a lawsuit, then we're here. Another
What concerns me about this case, frankly, is how conspicuous this limitation was. Because another question, which is what we were discussing with Mr. Zimmerman, is whether it's acceptable in the tariffs for somebody to say, we don't take items for transportation that are of quote-unquote unusual value, define as you define it. But you have... this is in actually the appendix of the plaintiff on in the back. What obviously is a print off from the website, Terms and Conditions of Service, and you get to the second page at least of this print off, page 2 of 21, UPS tariff. C, no service shall be rendered in the transportation of articles of unusual value, including but not limited to any package with an actual value of more than $50,000. Well, I want to know how hard, navigating through the website, some websites can be a pain in the neck to navigate through. How long does it take you to get there, and why isn't this something that really needs to be in very broad, you know, bold-faced letters up front? We're just not in that business.
Yeah. That is an issue that comes up with articles of unusual value, and that's also an issue that comes up with a number of other exclusions. You had asked the question whether it's appropriate for a carrier to limit goods. And if you look at other areas of the tariff, UPS, as long as other carriers, won't carry fireworks. They won't carry human remains. There are a number of things that they say that they won't carry, and no court has said that that's inappropriate or improper. To get to your specific question about how conspicuous does it need to be, this term and this concept isn't hidden in here. In fact, it is all over the tariff. It's listed in four different
It may be, but, you know,
documents.
I'm visualizing here you are, you know, owner of small store, and you go on the website and you think, I'll use UPS. I'm sure he's never going to use it again, but that's another matter. And so he goes on and he sees, oh, I can insure it up to $50,000, and, you know, all those little clicks accept terms, you know, that we're all used to every time we load Microsoft, you know, software on or something. You know, he clicks his way through. But if there had been something, you know, up front in boldface, you know, we do not accept everything. Please click on this link, you know, and we'll tell you what we don't take. Something to really alert a person to the fact that a restriction this significant is there, I can see how a person of common sense would think, I paid for $50,000 of insurance, sure it's a $105,000 ring, but I'm not asking for $105,000, I'm only asking for what I paid for.
I'd like to answer that in three ways. Yeah. First, as you indicated, this exclusion does come up very quickly in the terms and conditions, and this is a printout of what would be on the internet on someone's screen. I think there is some scrolling down that you may need to do. This doesn't all fit on one screen, but it is very early in the terms and conditions. Secondly, it's often easy to look at a specific case, whether it's in looking at terms and conditions of a contract, whether it's warnings in a product liability case. It's frequently easy to go back and say, boy, I wish this one exclusion were in bold print and early up. But when there are a number of exclusions that have to be covered, if they were all in bold print, the whole thing would just be bold. And they can't all be up at front. The third way that I would respond is that, as indicated by my statement of facts, which was almost longer than my argument section of the brief, this terminology is found in four different places that was available to Trever. It is found in the tariff. It is found in the rate and service guide, and both of those are part of the contract under federal common law. It's found here in my UPS terms and conditions, which we're discussing. And the fourth place that it's found is in the excess value brochure. And that's four different places. If we look in the tariff, it's listed in four different places in the tariff. It's listed in item 460, in item 535, item 537, and item 1060. And of those, item 537 couldn't be more clear and specific. That item reads, the excess value insurance does not provide any insurance protection for packages or letters having an actual value of more than $50,000, even if a lesser amount is specified in the insured value field of the UPS shipping service used.
Right. Actually, I have no question that if one were to persevere and read through all of this material that UPS furnishes, you would find that. I mean, that seems quite clear to me. My concern is that when you've got 21 pages of fine print, it would take you quite a while, and if you're me, you know, would strain your eyes reading on a computer screen all this stuff. The reason we have requirements for things to be clear and conspicuous is because we know that people, users, consumers, aren't going to sit there for an hour and a half reading through 21 pages of six-point font information on a computer screen. So what's so hard? I mean, they don't have to boldface a statement like UPS is likewise engaged in the transportation of packages via UPS registered trademark Sonic Air. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in here that clearly you don't need to boldface. So I don't know why there couldn't have been some visual clue of these such an important exclusion.
Yeah, and all I can submit is that towards the top of page 2 in a 21-page document is emphasizing that importance and that clarity and repeating it through the three different documents that make up the contract between the parties.
Right, and but this was an online transaction. We have no evidence in this record that he had any of the printed materials. This shipper's book that you send out to regular shippers or the insurance policy. We've got to stick, don't we, with what was online?
Well, to become a shipper online, to become activated, a shipper does have to read the terms and agree to them, and they've got to click a box. And they've got to do that a second time before they ship a package.
Right, but my only point is they're only doing that online, so we don't look at any tangible thing. We have to see what does the computer serve up to you.
The record is barren because this was submitted early in discovery on summary judgment based on stipulated facts. The record is barren as to whether Treber did have a physical copy of the rate and service
guide.
Right,
and so we have to assume favorably to him that he did not.
Well,
it's a summary judgment.
It is summary judgment, but we do know that the tariff and the rate and service guide are also available on UPS.com. So everything is there, and we know that in order to sign up for the service and to ship this package, they have to click on consent for the terms and conditions.
So they click on consent. Suppose the terms and conditions had run 400 pages. You would say still that satisfies a clear and conspicuous requirement? Because I'm trying to distinguish between clear and conspicuous on the one hand and just disclosure on the other hand. You obviously disclose it. I don't think that's even contestable, but clear and conspicuous.
I think both where it appears in the terms and conditions, where it appears in the tariff and the rate and service guide, and the number of times it appears there, I think covers both disclosure and I think covers conspicuousness.
Okay.
One of the other issues that was raised with Mr. Zimmerman was the issue of the released value doctrine. And he was asked to identify what specific case law says that you have to insure everything. And there are cases that say the opposite, that the release value doctrine does not require that a carrier allow a shipper to insure a package at the package's full value. We cited the Kemper case from the First Circuit. Treber cited the Emerson case, which also says the same thing. I do want to move on briefly to the preemption issue and talk about the fact that there are a number of state law arguments that have been made in this context, and the FAAAA preempts anything but a garden variety breach of contract case, which is exactly what this case is. This is the type of matter that is decided by federal common law. What everything else is preempted, including state law arguments regarding insurance and regarding everything else that was covered. This is a garden variety breach of contract case that under the Morales and Wolins cases is exactly what it is, a federal common law case that has to be decided under these rules.
Thank you, Mr. Mosher. Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Moser cited some cases which are cited in both briefs. I have every confidence the court will read them, and I have every confidence that they'll conclude that those cases support Straub in this case. Based on reasonable motives, based on fair opportunity insured, and Mr. Moser pointed out they don't have to insure for the full value. The Kemper case says that. This was not insured for full value. We don't argue that they have to insure for full value. The fact is they insured it for $50,000. Issued a policy in that amount, and that's all the plaintiff seeks. Nothing more. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the fourth case of the day.